Well, good morning. How are we doing, Harmony?
Morning.
All right, so we are in our fourth week in this series where we're looking at the life, third week. Thank you, Pat. Third. We're in our third week in this series talking about the life of Gideon, and what we've been focusing on is how God comes to us as we are. Amen. And through a relationship with Him, He grows us, He changes us, and He moves us to a different place. And honestly, as human beings, that's a big desire for most of us. Most of us have something in our lives that we would like to change. Something that we'd like to improve. Something that we would like to be better. The problem is, for most of us, is it's the same thing over and over again. And what we find is that as much as we may run and try and do different things, we find ourselves still struggling with the same problems over and over again. And what we've talked about is the reason for it is we're digging deep within ourselves to solve those problems instead of falling on our knees and going to God for the strength and the answers to the problems that we face. We as Christians need to look for the opportunity to be God's instruments of love and power throughout the world. And to do that, we have to look beyond just the problems that we face and be willing to be used by God for great things. One of my favorite quotes is from A.W. Tozer, and I've shared this at the beginning of each week, and I really want you to think about it. Tozer is a great author and pastor, and he said, "We can be in our day what the heroes of faith were in their day. But remember, at that time, they didn't know they were heroes." So all these people that we look at and we read their stories and we read their lives, and it provides us inspiration and courage and direction. They didn't know we would ever be sitting here thousands of years later reading about them. They didn't know at those times just the magnitude of the things that God was doing in their lives. But what they were people of faith willing to take those baby steps forward that God was calling them to do. You know, it's funny, I love having a toddler because if you ever remember having a toddler in your house, if you ask them to come see you, so like, you know, constant thing in our house, right? I'll be in one room, Tyler's in another, and I'll go, "Tyler, come here." He gets there. He will eventually make it from the room he's in to where I'm at. But if you could just track the chart, it is not a straight line. You know, it's like, "Oh, okay, I got up out of my chair. Oh, my Batman toy, I'm going to pick that up. And oh, I'm getting a little sip of juice. And oh my goodness, I can put my Batman toy up here. And now I'm going to go here, and then I'm going to go here, and I'm going to go here. And now I made my way to Dad." So he eventually gets to where I want him. But is it the most efficient way? Absolutely not. And along the way, does he get distracted? Does he get thrown off course? Absolutely. And you know what I love about that? I think if you and I could look at our own journeys and our place, or in our journey to God, we'd see that kind of chart. We'd see we were here, He called us to here, but we didn't go in a straight line. We ventured off course, we got distracted a few times, we had a few things come up in our way, and we lost track, but eventually we get back on course. And honestly, as Christians, we have to be okay with that. God tells us, "You're not going to be perfect. In fact, if you think you're perfect, you don't know me." The whole goal here is not perfection. The goal is that we have a passionate relationship with our God that pushes us closer to Him every single day. And that's why when we talk about change, what we have to realize is it doesn't come from us. In 2 Corinthians chapter 3, "Not that we are sufficient in ourselves to claim anything is coming from us, but our sufficiency is from God." It's funny, in some things in life, we intrinsically know this statement. So, for example, you rarely see us congratulate people for being tall, right? You rarely go up to a tall person, "I just really want to congratulate you that you did an awesome job at being tall. You know, you must have put a lot of work into becoming tall, and it's just very impressive to us all that you're tall." Right? We don't do that, because did that person choose to be tall? No, they were born with the genes that made them tall. And we see this in athletic ability. You can take two people, they can both train just as hard, they can both work just as hard, and guess what? One of them will just be faster than the other. Why? They were born that way. And so we see this in the physical world where we often realize, "I can't really take credit for all this because I was born with it." Yet we foolishly tend to take credit for things that are both in our makeup personality-wise and in our intelligence. Right? We start to claim credit for, "Well, I'm just smart. Well, I'm just put together. Well, I'm just able to do this. Well, I'm just able to do that. And let's be real. Did you create yourself? Not at all. There's a distance that we can go with the natural talent we have to taking it to its highest capability. But at the end of the day, you and I are only capable of what God made us capable to do. And so as Christians, there should never be a moment where we look in the mirror and go, I'm awesome. We should look in the mirror and go, my God is awesome. My God is awesome. And everything I'm capable of, everything I experience, everything I do points back to Him. What you and I are called to be is just an awesome billboard that screams, God is awesome. God is loving. God is forgiving. It's not supposed to be about us. And so as Christians, when we come to that point in life where when we look in the mirror and there's something that needs to be changed, it's foolish to look within ourselves. It's wise to look up to Him. He is the one that can help us move forward to where He is calling us to. Now, in Judges chapter 6 and 8, this is where we've been. We have been talking about the life of Gideon. And we've been talking about Gideon because Gideon is the kind of man that has changed because of his encounter with God. And to be honest, brothers and sisters, if you've ever truly encountered God, you will change. It's always seemed that way. Go to New Testament and read any story about where man encounters Jesus Christ. They will either become more passionate followers of Him, or they will hate Him more. But Christ has that kind of personality where when you meet Him, when you hear Him, when you encounter Him, you can't be left unchanged. Something moves in you. Something changes in you. And so with God, we should all see in our lives that as we encounter Him, there's some kind of change happening to us. And if we can honestly sit there and go, no, I've never changed, then what I would challenge you is, you've never met Him. You may have heard His name, you may have read His book, but I'm doubting you've ever met Him. And there is a huge difference between knowing about someone and actually knowing them. And what Christ calls us to be is people that know Him, not just know about Him. When you get to heaven, it's not going to be a list of questions that you have to know the answers to. He's not going to give you a Bible quiz, and if you get 80%, you're in. He's going to look at you, and He's going to go, I know you. Come in, my son. Come in, my daughter. It's not about what we know, it's about who we know and that relationship we have with Him. So what I love about Gideon is Gideon shows us these biblical heroes that we sometimes elevate to these unbelievable standards. They're just as messed up as you and me. And I love that. Because if we truly are honest about ourselves, we know we have flaws. If we truly honestly know ourselves, we know we have weaknesses. I mean, I don't know about you guys, I'm a mess in the morning. Right? You ever wake up in the morning, can't find the light switch, trip trying to get dressed. I mean, there are mornings where I just, my first 15 minutes, I'm like, should I even try this day? Right? I mean, if this is any indicator of how the day is going, I might just be best staying home. Well, with Gideon, we encounter someone who has that kind of personality. So God shows up. He tells Gideon, Gideon, you are going to crush the Midianites. You are going to raise up my people. You are going to save the day. You are a mighty warrior. And what does Gideon say? Me? Do you know who you're talking to? I am the biggest wimp of the biggest, wimpiest family in all of Israel. So not only did you pick the wrong person, you picked the wrong family. And I love this because this shows you the baseline of all sin. All sin is arrogance, even when the arrogance is steamed in low self-esteem. So think about that, right? Would you call Gideon an arrogant man when God first meets him? Initially, you think no, right? You think, well, no, he thinks he's a wimp. But think of what he just did. God comes down and talks to him, and Gideon goes, you're wrong. If there's ever a moment in our lives where we are standing face-to-face with God, and we look at Him and go, you're wrong, we can absolutely declare we are arrogant. And so sometimes we get confused by this and we think, well, just if I think lowly of myself, then I've accomplished humility. And I clearly can't be an arrogant individual. No, you can be arrogant in your own low self-esteem. It's a crazy way to think, but it's absolutely true. And you see it throughout the pages of the Bible. Often God comes down and goes, "You, I've picked you for something awesome." And do you know what most people's reaction is? Not me. Do you know who I am? I'm a mess up. I'm a mistake. There's no way I can accomplish this. And so the beauty of Gideon's story is he starts in a very human place, and God slowly starts to bring him out. So remember last week we talked, what was the first thing that he asked Gideon to do? He asked him to go into his neighborhood, and there was an altar set up to Baal, which is a false god, and there's an Asherah pole, which is a temple or a totem pole for worshiping Baal. And he tells him, what I want you to do is I want you to tear down that pole, I want you to break down that altar, I want you to build up a new one for me, and I want you to sacrifice for me. Is that a bold thing to do? Absolutely. Unbelievably bold thing to do. How does Gideon do it? At nighttime. Gideon does it at nighttime. So here's what I love about Gideon. Does he accomplish the bare minimum of what God has asked him to do? Yes, okay, God asked me to do this, I'm going to do this. But you still see that humanity in him. Does he do this boldly? Does he bring out the trumpets and declare, "This is a false altar, I am pulling it down for the might of our God"? No, it's like, okay, I think everybody's asleep. We're going to take care of this. Hopefully no one will even wake up, and they'll just wonder what happened in the morning. And in fact, that's exactly what happens. If you look at chapter 6, starting in verse 28. It says, "When the men of the town rose early in the morning, behold, the altar of Baal was broken down, and the Asherah beside it was cut down. And the second bull was offered on that altar that had been built." So the old temple's knocked out, a new one set up to God, and God is being honored through sacrifice. "And they said to one another, 'Who has done this thing?'" So did Gideon accomplish his goal of being stealth here? Absolutely. They don't know who it is. They got to put this together. "And after they had searched and inquired, they said, 'Gideon, the son of Joash, has done this thing.' Then the men of the town said to Joash, 'Bring out your son that he may die, for he has broken down the altar of Baal and cut down the Asherah beside it.'" Okay, so they go to his dad. They say, "Your son is guilty. He needs to die for this." Now here's what I love. Where's Gideon in all of this? Not present. What's being said by not being said is Gideon is in hiding right now. He has accomplished what God has asked him to do, but did he overnight become a mighty warrior? Not even close. And I love that because it's real. Any of you who have been on your journey with God know that you didn't change overnight. Any of you that have been on your path with Christ know it has been a long path with a bunch of baby steps. Every now and then you get a big leap. But it is a journey, and it takes time. And the big sin of Gideon's life, this fear, it's going to be at him for a while. It's going to keep trying to pull him back. It's going to keep trying to slow him down. It's going to keep trying to stop him from moving forward on the path that God has laid out. And that's how life goes. Often you know when you're going to feel the most temptation is when you're walking the right way. Because Satan's not interested in stopping people who are messing up their lives. Those that are destroying themselves, he's like, "Go for it. How can I help?" It's those who are going the right way that he goes, "We got to stop these people. We got to get in their way. We got to pull them back because they're going to start making a difference." And when you make a difference, not only do you change your life, but what else do you do? You change other people's lives. So here's Gideon hiding. His father is now accounting for him. And I love what his dad says, because his dad brings some unbelievable wisdom. And here's what I want you to see that happens. There's a ripple that happens when just one person is willing to take steps of faith with God. Yeah. It's funny, but you can even see that in our own church. There are people here today that I can kind of do the Kevin Bacon thing where you go, like, he was in this movie with this person and that person, and he knows this person through that movie. There are people here today who the chain is like 7 members long. One person came, they were neighbors with this one person, and they started to come, and then they worked with somebody, and they told them about the church, and they started coming, and they told their neighbor about it, and now they're at the church. It just starts to ripple. That's the impacts that God makes. And so look at what Joash says here. Look at verse verse 31. But Joash said to all who stood against him, "Will you contend for Baal, or will you save him? Whoever contends for him shall be put to death by morning. If he is a god, let him contend for himself, because his altar has been broken down." Therefore, on that day, Gideon was called Jerubbaal. That is to say, let Baal contend against him, because he has broken down his altar. So what does his dad say? He says, if this Baal guy is real, he'll handle this himself. If Baal's real, he will strike down his own fear on Gideon. And basically what he's calling out to the people is, let's be honest about what we worship here. Do we truly believe we worship a god Baal that's listening to us? Or is this just tradition that we're baked in? Is this just us going through the motions? Or do we really truly believe Baal is going to handle this? And what kind of cuts to the heart of these men is, they know nothing's going to happen. They know nothing is going to happen. And it starts to change the hearts of the men. And what happens to Gideon is after this, he actually calls and sends out messengers to build an army up. And so I want you to kind of see how that ripple happens, right? God asks him to do something kind of big, kind of intimidating. He does it, but he's fearful. He's scared. And after he accomplishes it, he hides. But then one person stands up for him, the public opinion changes, and now all of a sudden, he has a little bit more boldness. A little bit more boldness. Now, you and I reading this, what we would love to see is from this point forward, fear was never a problem for Gideon again. Right? Because we are a silver bullet society. You know what I mean by silver bullet? Silver bullet society is a group of people that believe that there is one simple solution that will solve all the problems, and it is quick and it is easy. Do you know how we know this? Go home and watch commercials. Right? Hey, just buy this treadmill and three times for 30 minutes a week and you'll be the fittest person you know. Will you? No. Do you know what it actually takes to look like the guy on TV who has the six-pack? It means that you're counting calories. It means you're looking at every single meal you're eating. It means you're working out 6 days a week for multiple hours. It means you're taking vitamins. It means you're doing a million things to be that. But we want to believe the commercial. I just need the treadmill and three 30-minute sessions, and I'm going to look like that. And honestly, it's why most of us stop doing things. Because you get the treadmill, you do three sessions for 30 minutes, you look in the mirror and you go, I don't know, man. I don't see no six pack popping up. And eventually, you just stop going into it. But if you ever watch those infomercials, they're all about how this one little thing for three easy payments is going to make your life better. And most of the time, it won't. Because that's not how real change happens. Real change is a heart thing. Real change is a spirit thing. And those don't just change overnight. And so look what happens. Look at verse 36 of chapter 6. Gideon, encouraged by what's happened by knocking down Baal's altar, decides that he is going to go at the Midianites. These people that have been oppressing the Israelites, these people that have been pushing them down, these people that have been sitting there bringing pain into their lives, he's going to go after them, just like God has asked. But look what happens in verse 36. Then Gideon said to God, "If you will save Israel by my hand, as you have said, behold, I am laying a fleece of wool on the threshing floor. If there is dew on the floor, fleece alone, and it is dry on all the ground, then I shall know that you will save Israel by my hand, as you have said." And it was so. When he rose early the next morning and squeezed the fleece, he wrung out enough dew from the fleece to fill a bowl with water. Now here's why I like Gideon. He's so human. Let's be honest about what's already occurred for Gideon, okay? Has he received signs? Multiple signs. One, he was talking to an angel of the Lord. And when he talked to that angel of the Lord, he created a miracle in front of him, remember? Gideon gave him soup, Gideon gave him bread, and he consumed it with fire. Miracle one. Miracle two, God comes to him and tells him, "Break down the altar of Baal and offer me an offering." He does that, and what happens? The people respond to him and now are an army ready to take his commands. Those I would both call miracles. Is Gideon satisfied? No. Let's do a magic trick here, God. I'm going to lay this piece of cloth out here at night. And if there's only water on it and all the ground is dry, then I'll be confident that you want me to do this. God does it. You'd think that would be enough. No, not enough. Then Gideon said to God, "Let not your anger burn against me. Let me just speak once more. Please let me just test once more with the fleece. Please let it be dry on the fleece only, and on all the ground let there be dew." Now here's what I love. Does Gideon know he's pushing it? Yes, he even says in his prayer, please don't let your anger burn against me. Right? That kind of reminds me like when I was talking to my wife about going hunting. I'm like, okay, yeah, so I got to get the scope mounted, and then I got to put, you know, an absorber pad on the back end, and that's pretty much it. And there'll be the processing fee for the deer, and I got to get some ammo, and it's like, what else are you going to add on to this? And there's about five other things that had to get there, but each time I added one, I'm like, come on, just bear with me. Here's the grand total. I'm bringing it up, and this is Gideon. He's asking for more, and he knows. You're pushing it. But here's what God does. He lets him see it. He meets those tests. Now, here's an important thing for us to understand. Does this mean that you and I should test God like this? No. What this shows us, though, is that God knows his children. He knows his children. He knows you and me. We talked both weeks about how God created us. He formed us. He breathed life into us. He knows you. And he knows what you need to take your steps forward. He knew Gideon was a coward. He knew he was burdened with great fear. And so for Gideon, God was willing to do this. Now, for some of you, you may be like Gideon, and so maybe God will do things for you like this. But others of you are not Gideon. And so don't act like God will do this exact same thing for you. I don't want to go by your houses this week and see you laying blankets out to test dew on them. Okay? The key is this is a God that intimately knows his creation. And he knows what Gideon needs to see for Gideon to move forward to accomplish that which God has made him for. And I'd love to tell you that after this, there's no more fear in Gideon. But that's not humanity. It's not how it works. This gives him enough courage to take the next step forward. That's it. And honestly, brothers and sisters, I think you and I need to think more like that in life. I think sometimes you and I, we get so caught up in the so-called big picture that what ends up happening to us is we just kind of lock up in fear. We end up not moving forward at all. Now for me, where this is most evident is weight loss goals. I typically want to have like a goal of losing something like 50 to 60 pounds. Well, 50 to 60 pounds, is that a lot? Absolutely. And you know what tends to happen is I'll start changing behaviors, I'll start working out, I'll start eating a little bit. And you know what happens on the scale? Unbelievably small movement. Half a pound, a pound. If we're really going crazy, 2 pounds a week. And you know what starts to happen is you start to go 65 pounds, 2 pounds. I skipped all that fast food. I ate a bunch of stuff that didn't taste good. I worked out a lot. And I'm still 58 pounds away from my goal. And then what you do is go, lock in. One more week, baby. So you do it again the next week. And then you're like, 3 pounds. Now I'm 57 pounds away from my goal. And you know what starts to happen? You get discouraged. Why? Because you're looking at the big picture. And eventually what happens? You go, forget it. Let's go to Wendy's and get a double cheeseburger. Not that I've ever done that. Everything, no onions. Large Coke. Diet Coke. You want to be low on the calories there. What we need to realize sometimes is forget the big picture. Just forget the big picture, because you know how many times I've done this where I've had those minimal increments happening and I've quit? Years. And if I just kept doing that, I would have gotten to where I wanted to get in less than a year. But I lost sight because I was focused on this huge dramatic change and I was angry that it wasn't happening instantly. But if I just kept taking baby steps forward, I'd have got there. And see, brothers and sisters, there's some of you, you have this picture of yourself one day when, that you want to be. And the problem is you realize it won't happen overnight. So a lot of times you give up. You quit. And all you really should be asking yourself is today, did I take steps closer to where God wants me to be? That's it. Because guess what? I don't know where I'll be in a week or in a day or even if I have another day. All I know is that God is giving me today. All I know is that God has given me the ability in this day to choose Him or something else. And that's honestly where we should set our sights. Today, with the breath in my lungs, can I pursue God? Yes or no? Forget the big picture. You know who's got the big picture figured out? He does. What He's honestly tried to do for us is He's tried to take that fear and that stress out of our lives and say, guess what? I got the big plan. I just need you to take these steps today. That's it. Forget everything else. Just move from here to here. Can you do that? Can you do that? And what's amazing is, like what we're seeing with Gideon, is already this man is starting to change. Is fear still a problem? Yes. But do you think the Gideon who is standing there with that fleece with an army encamped behind him, do you think that man ever pictured he would be there when he was farming in a hole in the ground because he was so afraid of his enemies? Never. That first day that God showed up, he would have never believed that just in a few weeks he'd have an army ready to fight his enemies. And so even though in that moment fear is still present, is he changing? Yes. And the beauty is, God's going to keep working on him. It's funny, I'll be honest. So every Monday or so, me and Maria talk, and I told her I'd be done with Gideon in 1 week. Then I was like, 2 weeks. 2 weeks, I'll be done with Gideon. Now it's going to be, in 4 weeks, we might be done with Gideon. But you know what? That's how it goes. It's journeys. It's little baby steps. And brothers and sisters, the biggest thing we need to know in this is we need to know who our God is. Ephesians chapter 3:12, in whom we have boldness and access with confidence through our faith in Him. Are you a confident people? Do you boldly face life? You should. You absolutely should. One of my favorite stories in the New Testament is the story of the apostles. And these apostles are speaking and living and acting so boldly that their enemies go, you were with Christ, weren't you? We know because of the boldness that you have. I love that. They don't know that they're with Christ because they're wearing some big, huge cross or there's a fish on the back of the chariot or because they're wearing some t-shirt that says, what would Jesus do? They know it because they look at them and go, you boldly attack life. In fact, the only ones we've seen live like this, they knew Jesus. You knew Him, didn't you? Man, I'd love if that's how people knew we were Christians. The people would look at our lives and go, what a fearless, bold people. They must know God. How awesome that would be. 2 Timothy 1:7, for God gave us a spirit, not of fear, but of power and love and self-control. Honestly, this is kind of my personal definition of disciple. But I want to ask myself, am I getting closer to God? Am I following the path? Am I measuring up? The thing that I ask myself is those three things. Am I displaying His power? Am I showing His love? And is there a self-control in my life? Because it's that self-control to take those baby steps forward. We're not afraid. We're powerful, we're loving, and we're self-controlled. And my goodness, with just those three things, the way that God can use you to impact the world. It's so amazing. Next week, we will continue with Gideon, and we will see his last act of fear, and we will see his final transformation. All right? What we're going to do now is we're going to just take a few minutes to pray. And as we pray, I want you to really just focus on God's Word today. For some of you, you already know Him. You already have a relationship with Him. And what you need to be asking Him is, Father, what's the next step? Father, what is that step that you want me to take today? Where do you want me to go? And for some of you, you just need to start the relationship. You've probably heard His name. You've probably heard about things that He's done. But you don't actually know Him. He's a character with a bunch of facts tied to His name. But He is not your Lord that you wake up each day to and go, Father, I submit myself to You. And so as we pray, whatever scenario you are in, ask God to paint that path. Ask Him to show you that next step forward that you need to take. After a few minutes of prayer, Maria is going to lead us in our closing song. But let's just take a few moments where we're at to silently pray with God. Our deacon, Brother James, will be in the back. I'll be up at the front if there's anything you want to pray with somebody about. All right?